This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, July 13th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder City Council will be back in session tonight after a short summer break. We'll get a preview from Boulder Beat reporter Shay Castle. A toilet that pays people to use it? That story and more in the latest edition of This Week in Water. And we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. How on Earth comes to you at the bottom of the hour. The science show team investigates a rare cousin of the dragonfly, an early warning for celiac disease, and bad news. Middle-aged people in the U.S. are dying more often, especially middle-aged men of color. At 9 a.m., it's The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, The Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines. Further details about an incident involving four people and a large cache of weapons in a Denver hotel room are starting to trickle out. A housekeeper at the Maven Hotel found the firearms and tactical accessories Sunday during the course of her work and alerted authorities. The proximity of the hotel to Coors Field and the vantage point fueled speculation that the weapons could be part of a plan for a Las Vegas-style mass shooting. Four people were taken into custody, three of them men on weapons charges and a fourth woman on drug charges. The Denver Post notes arrest documents make no mention of a mass shooting plot. Yesterday evening, the Denver City Council unanimously approved Mayor Michael Hancock's nomination of Phil Washington as the new CEO of Denver International Airport. Washington led Denver Metro's Regional Transportation District as CEO from 2009 to 2015 and was the CEO of the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transportation Authority for the last 6 years. Per news reports, Los Angeles Sheriff's deputies are conducting an ongoing investigation of the L.A. Transit Authority and a nonprofit that received a no-bid contract. The investigation was not discussed during the City Council meeting approving Washington's nomination. Washington will oversee the airport's multiple expansion projects, including the terminal renovation. As the airport CEO, Washington will be paid an annual salary of over $260,000, making his position the highest paid in Denver city government. Washington will begin the job this week. Colorado home care workers will rally in Denver this afternoon as part of a nationwide day of action, calling on Congress to invest in the nation's home health care economy. As part of the day of action across 24 cities, home care workers are calling on Congress to pass President Biden's care plan investing $400 billion in the nation's home care workforce. Rally participants are also demanding a $15 hourly minimum wage, paid time off and benefits, and the opportunity to join a union for the 2.3 million home care workers in the U.S. Women make up an estimated 87% of home care workers. More than 60% are people of color, and a third are immigrants. The Denver rally takes place today at SEIU Local 105's Justice for All Center on West Alameda Avenue and concludes with the Essential Worker All-Star Celebration at 5:30 p.m. at Raíces Brewery on Colfax Avenue. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Marcia Fudge will hold events in Denver, Boulder, and Inglewood this week. Secretary Fudge kicks off her Colorado visit this morning with a meeting with Denver Mayor Michael Hancock and Congresswoman Diana DeGette. She'll be in Boulder this afternoon with Congressman Joe Neguse and in Inglewood tomorrow with the city's mayor. Access to affordable housing will top the agenda. The University of Colorado Boulder and the City of Boulder have released a draft agreement on the annexation of CU Boulder South. Stacy Johnson has more.
The City of Boulder and CU Boulder released a draft agreement Monday stating the proposed conditions for the city to annex around 300 acres of university land at the junction of US 36 and Table Mesa Drive. The draft agreement, now released for public review and comment, addresses flood protection for downstream Boulder residents, the protection and restoration of riparian habitat, and notes specific conditions for housing development on a limited portion of the site. CU Boulder South has been the subject of proposed planning and collaboration spanning multiple years between the city, county, and the university. Community members may share feedback through a Be Heard Boulder questionnaire available from July 14th to August 13th. The city is hosting a briefing and listening session tomorrow, Wednesday, July 14th, from 4 to 5:30 p.m. The event will be recorded and posted online for those unable to attend. More information about the project and the draft agreement may be found at the city's CU Boulder South Annexation Project webpage, the city's South Boulder Creek Flood Mitigation Project webpage, or the University of Colorado CU South Annexation webpage. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
In today's forecast, we're looking at a high of 91 with a low of 62. That haze you see in the air is partially caused by smoke from wildfires, so be aware of air quality issues as well. The National Weather Service predicts potentially hazardous conditions in north and northeastern Colorado today due to thunderstorms and strong gusts of wind due to roll in this afternoon. Right now outside our Boulder studios, it's 68 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Boulder City Council will be back in session tonight after a brief summer break. Joining me to discuss what's on the agenda is Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What are the standout items on tonight's City Council agenda?
There are only three major items on tonight's agenda. This was initially supposed to be a study session, but they changed it to a special meeting so they could take some action. The first is a concept plan review for partial redevelopment of Diagonal Plaza. That will include a public hearing. The second is an update on part two of the community benefit work that's related to, you know, how high buildings can go and what developers have to provide in exchange for that quote unquote extra height. Of course, we know they always stay under the citywide height limit of 55 feet. And the third item is a check-in with council on the priorities they established when they first started as this council 2 years ago, what they've got accomplished so far, what they have left to do.
And briefly, what are those priorities?
Well, there were 13 of them, originally 12, but then with COVID that got added as a 13th priority. Things like housing, homelessness, the CU South annexation, quite a few of those. And they've actually accomplished quite a bit compared to at least the last council. They have 7 of those items completed and 3 more will be completed by the end of the year. A couple things had to be delayed because of staffing reductions, but all in all, this council accomplished quite a bit.
And the largest chunk of the meeting, 90 minutes, I believe, is going to discussing the Diagonal Plaza plan. What's the backstory behind this development?
Boy, how much time do you have? This is an area of town that's been not exactly blighted, although it does meet a lot of the state criteria for blight. It's just been kind of declining for several years, at least 10 years. And in fact, it was 11 years ago that the city took a look at what could be possibly done there because the tax revenue was declining, stores were cycling in and out, major retailers, and just a lot of empty spaces, a lot of vacant parking lot. It was built, you know, in the 60s at a time where you needed a lot more parking than you do now. Ultimately, that council 11 years ago decided not to do anything. They decided to let redevelopment happen incrementally. That is one parcel at a time on that site. There are more than a dozen owners there, so it makes it very challenging to do anything. So this is the first really big redevelopment plan that the city's seen in that time in over a decade. And it is a plan for housing, which includes some affordable housing and some ground floor, you know, retail and community level spaces that is predominantly on empty parking lot there. So it's on the southwest and the north side. And the only buildings that will be redeveloped are the empty former Sports Authority and the occupied Walgreens. Walgreens has another store 2 blocks south. So they are moving their employees and prescriptions there according to developers. So that's what's up on Tuesday night. Council isn't going to be voting on this. It's the concept plan level. They're just going to be providing feedback on what they think of the current plan's design.
But as you mentioned, it's a plan that's kind of been up in the air for the past 11 years. Does it seem like there's actually wind behind the sails and, you know, something's actually going to get done? Or is it going to be just like this endless loop of discussions that go nowhere?
You know, I hate to make that prediction because we do love endless discussions that go nowhere in Boulder, particularly around development. But all signs point to this being something that might actually happen. I mean, if the city stands by its own goals and plans, the Diagonal Plaza is called out specifically in the Boulder Valley Comprehensive Plan as an area in need of revitalization. This council and the previous council both made it a priority for redevelopment. That's the whole reason, you know, Boulder applied for the much maligned Opportunity Zone, you know, reinvestment designation. And it met with generally favorable feedback from planning board. There was a little bit of tussle over what type of housing should go there. But in general, you know, it provides streetscapes. There's a park there. It provides affordable housing at an existing neighborhood and a bunch of housing in it. So if it can get through, it's almost exactly what Boulder says it wants. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I guess we'll see tonight what council says.
Well, and you know, the timing is interesting because some heavy hitters are in town as well. Joe Neguse will be here with Housing Secretary Marcia Fudge for a discussion today at Boulder Housing Partners, which I believe would be in charge of the development of that plaza as well. So it's interesting that these items are converging all at the same time.
Absolutely. BHP will be responsible for the affordable development there. There's a you know, market rate developer as well. But as we know, because of the way affordable housing is funded, the affordable housing can't go there without the market rate housing. And BHP has been eyeing this site for several years. As I said, there's an existing community there with a community center and a park. It's almost all family housing. So they are quite excited about the possibility here.
Okay. And, you know, Boulder City Council hasn't been the only one who took a brief vacation. You took a break as well. What do you have in store for Boulder Beat news readers?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I think 2021 is a bit of a maintenance year. I did have a lot of big plans for this year, but then, you know, with COVID fatigue and then particularly the King Super shooting, I just noticed a lot of fatigue from my readers. And myself, to be quite honest, it's emotionally draining to cover these tragedies in addition to, you know, they're just the regular happenings of local government. So for me, I just kind of want to maintain. I told my readers over the summer, you know, like, go away, go do something, take a vacation, don't read the news, come back in the fall and be refreshed and ready to gear up for the local election, which is really where my focus is going to be for the next several months, is making sure to really do those in-depth pieces on all the city council candidates and the issues that will be on voters' ballots. So that's what they can expect from me this summer and fall.
Shay Castle is the founder of the online news site, boulderbeat.news. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's now time for This Week in Water from H2O Radio.
A toilet that pays people to use it. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Excessive heat continues to grip the West, where over 30 million people were under either an excessive heat warning or advisory. Hot and dry conditions are also occurring in high plains states, including the Dakotas and Nebraska.
In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown issued an order directing all state agencies to refrain from watering lawns, washing windows, running fountains, and installing new landscaping.
In California, Governor Gavin Newsom asked residents to voluntarily lower their water use by 15% through reducing landscape irrigation, running dishwashers and washing machines only when full, finding and fixing leaks, and taking shorter showers.
The recent extreme heat in the northwest U.S. and southwest Canada had devastating effects on humans and wildlife. Coroners on both sides of the border observed an increase in deaths from triple-digit temperatures that stretched from Oregon to British Columbia.
The heat is also believed to have led to the deaths of countless sea animals like mussels, clams, and snails. Chris Harley, a zoologist at the University of British Columbia, said he estimates roughly 1 billion animals died off the coast of Vancouver during the heat wave. They are still gathering data, and the number could go higher.
The loss of the mussels will have massive effects, including for starfish and ducks, which feed on the creatures. Also, the mussels are filter feeders, and their disappearance will affect seawater clarity.
Ken Fong, a Canadian wildlife official, told the Washington Post that he attributes the death of all the animals to a perfect storm of a very low tide coinciding with the hottest part of the day that exposed them to the worst of the extreme heat.
Scientists with the organization called World Weather Attribution say the heat wave would have been virtually impossible without human-caused climate change. And as warming continues, such events will become a lot less rare.
Predictions of La Nina could bring some relief for the Pacific Northwest. The phenomenon is a cycle of cooler seawater in the central Pacific Ocean that affects the jet stream and influences weather in the U.S. and around the world.
The conditions bring a higher-than-normal chance of wet and cool weather to the northwest, but dampens the possibility of rain across the southwest. La Nina can also make Atlantic hurricanes more likely to form.
The National Weather Service is predicting a 66% chance that La Nina conditions could occur starting as early as September.
Last week, NOAA announced that the U.S. had the hottest June on record. As the climate crisis deepens, cities will urgently need to find ways to reduce the amount of heat they generate.
Green roofs, trees, and vegetation can help by shading buildings, deflecting the sun's rays, and releasing moisture into the atmosphere. However, much heat comes from roads, which absorb solar energy and convert it into heat.
One company's solution? Spray the asphalt with sunscreen. As Earther reports, a company called Pavement Technology has created a treatment using titanium dioxide, the same compound found in many sunblocks.
The company claims the spray not only lowers a roadway's temperature, but also makes the asphalt stronger, which would be a plus given the number of streets that buckled when the heat dome hit the Northwest last month.
The company claims their spray can also dissolve exhaust from cars. It says that 1 mile of treated pavement can have the same benefit as planting 20 acres of trees.
Several cities, including Charlotte, Raleigh, and Charleston, are putting the smog-eating road spray to test. And last year, Orlando International Airport used the treatment, and researchers found it cut nitrogen oxide pollution in half.
And finally, imagine having a toilet that pays you to use it. For students at a university in South Korea, that's the deal. They go in a campus loo and score digital currency to buy food, books, or a cup of coffee.
It's not just any old toilet. It's the eco-friendly BV toilet invented by Professor Jaewon Jo. It not only uses less water, but also provides energy to power buildings on campus.
BV uses a vacuum pump to send feces into a tank where microorganisms break it down into methane gas for use in stoves, hot water boilers, or fuel cells.
As an incentive to use the toilet, Joe created a virtual currency called Cool, which means honey in Korean. Each visit to the BV earns 10 cool a day, which students can spend at a special campus shop.
An average person defecates enough to generate half a kilowatt hour of electricity. If an entire university is doing their business in the BV toilets, it could really add up.
Students won't be flush with cash for their poop, but for a pay-as-you-go scheme, it's pretty stinking rich.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time.
Xcel Energy is asking Colorado regulators to approve temporary rate increases, in part due to power failures in Texas. Eric Galatis has more.
When this winter's power outages in Texas's deregulated electric grid caused shockingly high utility bills for customers, Xcel Energy was also forced to pay inflated prices to continue serving its customers in Colorado. And now the bill is coming due. Luke Ilderton with Energy Outreach Colorado explains Xcel and other utility companies across the U.S. had to buy natural gas in the same wholesale energy market that saw large spikes in demand as power stations in Texas not equipped to withstand freezing temperatures went offline.
And therefore, prices increased and utilities needed to pay the elevated pricing for natural gas in order to meet the needs of Coloradans to heat their homes that weekend.
Xcel has asked the Colorado Public Utilities Commission to approve rate increases to cover this winter spike in prices, as well as investments it's already been making for improvements and updates. Residential customers could see an increase of more than $9 on their monthly electric bills, with small businesses paying close to $15 more starting in September 2022. Ilderton says for many Coloradans, an increase of $9 a month can force families to make tough decisions about which bills to pay. He says people can find out if they're eligible for assistance by calling Energy Outreach Colorado's Heat Help hotline at 866-HEAT-HELP. But Ilderton says there are ways for families to reduce energy costs now.
That starts with evaluating the efficiency of your home, determining what energy conservation practices can be implemented in your home, and thinking about what you as a household can do to control your own home energy usage.
If the PUC approves Xcel's request, the company says it will use part of the $343 million generated to prevent wildfires by clearing vegetation near power lines and will install smart meters to allow families to monitor their energy use in real time. The increase will also support investments in a 500-megawatt wind farm on Colorado's eastern plains. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And now we check in with KGNU's comment line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners. This week, there was only one saved message on the comment line. We go to that now.
Yeah, hi, this is James. And, I hadn't heard any comments on the new news director, Shannon Young. So let me be the first to give you a warm public welcome, Shannon. Shannon, it's so nice to have you join our community. I was so pleased to hear that you've taken the helm of the news department. I'd heard you many times before on FSRN, and now I feel like things are going to be just fine. The first thing I wanted to address is Donald Rumsfeld. In an article in The Nation magazine, Phyllis Bennis, who is heard frequently on Democracy Now!, subtitled this article, "The Human and Economic Costs of Donald Rumsfeld's Wars Are Staggering." The lead paragraph says, quote, "Unlike the hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and the Afghans and so many others killed in the wars he launched and the torture cells he oversaw, Donald Rumsfeld died peacefully." Second thing is, I want to point out that another perpetrator that seems to have gotten away scot-free and actually getting VIP treatment in our own community. As Janine Jackson on Counterspin Monday points out, that the fossil fuel industry is the culprit behind the catastrophic and devastation from climate change. Yet the corporate media, their friends and accomplices, won't talk about that. And we all know that we locally have been affected by last year's wildfires that caused so much property damage and ravaged the forest, so many thousands of acres. The fossil fuel industry knew 40 years ago of these effects, these exact effects that would be happening, right? By their actions. Right? And not only are they allowed to continue, they sweet-talk our city council into putting a muni-killing measure on our ballot. Then they prance in to save the day with their energy solutions. It kind of makes me ill. This is the state of our society. Thanks. Bye.
And while that was the only comment on the line, we did get plenty of feedback during the recent fund drive. I asked listeners about what they'd like to hear more or less of, and want to thank everyone for the feedback and for supporting KGNU. Listeners expressed mixed feelings about the frequency of the BBC, for example. Some want it back at 6 a.m., others want to hear less of it altogether. Another comment that has come up is to focus more coverage on the goings-ons in Denver. Do you have something to say about the news programming? Give us a call on our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play those comments back Tuesday mornings during the Morning Magazine. Again, that number is 303-447-9911.